wanted to tell you a little bit about Arts and Minds. We're a little bit different because I am not a museum. Arts and Minds is not a museum, nor are we a care organization, but we're a sort of a hybrid that was founded in 2010. I founded it in partnership with Dr. Jamie Noble. Figuring out my slide switch there. Jamie Noble is a neurologist on the faculty at Columbia University who had about 2 weeks off between his fellowship and his placement at Harlem Hospital. And he went to meet me at MoMA, and he went to Manuscapes where I was teaching. And I think this is all because he had a good art history course as an undergraduate. And he had been interested in the course of dementing disease for creative people. So people like Willem de Kooning, people like William Quintermolin, people like Woody Guthrie. What happens to the art or music of a person as they progress with Alzheimer's disease or another dementia? But when he was in these programs, and particularly the day that I met him at the Met, he noticed what was happening between the care partners. And he thought, this is something that could make a difference for my patients now. He was about to start his clinical appointment at Harlem Hospital, and there were very few people of color in the room except for the paid caregivers at that time. There were also, I don't think there's anything above 80th Street at that point. It was before the Jewish Museum started. So he asked me to work with him to start a program uptown, and I think he originally thought perhaps I would be taking his patients on field trips. But being a museum educator, I went to my colleague, Shonda Lawson, at the Studio Museum in Harlem, and we decided that we would work together. So in 2010, we piloted our first project there, recruiting participants through church bulletins and senior centers and however we could kind of get into, I think we were handing flyers out on the street, on 125th Street, to get people into our program. And so what you see on the screen are what are now, this is my old slide. We're now in 5 museums in New York. So this Studio Museum in Harlem is the far one. We have programs at New York Historical Society. About a year and a half ago, we began programs in Spanish at El Museo del Barrio. And a Mexican researcher told me this is the only program like it in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I still find this hard to believe, but that it's the only one in Spanish. We do partnerships with the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and we also work with the Jewish Museum now. So we have core programs where Arts and Minds is the only sort of game within the institutional walls. That would be Studio Museum, El Museo, and New York Historical Society. The Met has Met Escapes, of course, which where I came from, and the Jewish Museum has JM Journeys, but we're doing sort of pipeline program, so to speak, for patients from the Columbia Department of Aging and Dementia. I don't think I need to go over this with this audience. We know what the need is on the micro level. I like to present it this way with memory at the bottom when I'm talking to audiences who are not necessarily professionals, because in a way it's the first thing we think about. But we can really impact these other symptoms in our programming, particularly, I think, attention. In the world being the way it is right now with so many distractions, coming off the busy street in New York City, you cross the threshold into a museum and you're in a kind of a liminal space. You're outside the space of your everyday life. It's a kind of a betwixt and between place where you really can focus on a work of art. We can also speak to visual and spatial perception and perhaps to executive function as well. So our goals are probably your goals, and this is how I like to articulate them. We work to provide opportunities for cognitive, physical, and social stimulation by connecting with art. As Lindsay said right up at the beginning, it's a physical activity to come out of your house and get yourself somewhere. And there was one early participant who came with a friend. This woman had been an artist and she had been a runner. But the family didn't have any care support for her. And what her children were doing to keep her safe was sort of removing things from her apartment. So she had been a painter, but all her art supplies were put away. And would go to take her for a walk usually, and it was very hard to coax her to walk. She would find Laura sweeping, kind of perseverating with the sweeping thing. And Laura later told us, you know, I have such trouble getting her to move. She used to be a runner, but when she comes into the studio museum, she goes up the stairs. So there's something physical and energizing about what touches people. We also work to reduce caregiver burden, isolation, and stress. So our programs, like many of the others in New York City, bring the caregiving dyad together, care partners, whether they're professional caregivers or family caregivers. And I know many of you know Lynn and Manny. The structure is similar. We have 90-minute programs. About half an hour is devoted to a dialogue of response and interpretation. And this is an advantage of the small museum where you can transition spaces reasonably quickly. We can have the art making component on the same day that we have the gallery component. And so that's what we do. And I'm showing you here a work by Pamela Council, who is a young artist who was showing then at the Studio Museum, who uses acrylic fingernails. In fact, she makes sets of acrylic fingernails, and then she makes them, she presents them in a box, and then she also unpacks them and turns them into sculpture. So this sculpture, it's a tabletop sculpture about this large. It looks a little bit like a roller coaster at Coney Island or a dinosaur mounted at the Museum of Natural History, and it's called Flojo World Record Nails. So although the 90s were long ago, the 80s were longer ago, and Florence Griffith Joyner was the great champion sprinter who had those fantastic, you know, one bare leg and one covered leg and one bare arm and giant, really, really long fingernails. She had this amazing style. And the day we talked about this, a longtime participant who is becoming increasingly less verbal got up out of her seat and she said, "It's something other. It makes you want to get up and go." You know, sometimes they just really, they get to the heart of the meaning. So we've studied the impact, and we continue to study the impact on individuals with dementia. Our studies show an improvement in mood and a reduction in apathy that's quite measurable. So as you know, apathy is a real problem for people with dementia, just getting up and getting moving. But these programs seem to show an improvement in that. Improved cognitive function perceived within the program. So what I mean by this is sort of what you were talking about, that the care partner sees something in the person with dementia that's not expressing it at home. That person is, whose slide was that? The person is very sleepy at home, and however, they're at the museum, they are speaking and responding and seemingly practicing cognitive function in a very capable way. For caregivers, they report an improvement in mood and a reduction in stress and isolation. And of course, caregiver burden is a big problem with Alzheimer's disease. If we have 5 million people living with a diagnosis, we have about 15 million unpaid caregivers. And the stresses of caregiving are not to be exaggerated. They are really very severe. And the onus is on the well partner to remake the relationship. And that is a huge, huge challenge. So if an activity, a shared activity, which is very different from respite separated from the person with dementia, can improve caregiver self-efficacy. That's something we're also looking at now, to improve the confidence of the caregiver, that what they're doing it right, and they're doing it well, and they're learning from how educators model communication and interaction, and they're learning from other care partners within the context of the program. So this is potentially a very large impact. We've looked at medical students. We invited preclinical medical students to attend programs. And there they took the Dementia Attitude Survey, that 20-question validated instrument that examines both knowledge and attitudes about dementia. they kind of came in sort of neutral. They came to one 90-minute Arts and Minds program. They took the test again. There was some kind of control. Took it again and showed an improvement in their dementia attitudes. So this is great in a world where we have a shortage of geriatricians, and we actually have a shortage of neurologists as well. Right. So if we normally, medical students don't see people with dementia until they are at the clinical phase of their studies, which means they see them in the hospital when they're very, very ill. And then they can't really imagine how they could possibly work with this. But we had, you know, just we have the real data, but we have the anecdotal data, which is even better, where one of these medical students went back to her room and told her roommate about this fabulous program she just went to, and the room said, "Oh, really? My aunt has dementia," and now the aunt is in the program, and the student is in the neurology program. So, you know, what more could you want? We also did a study about the impact on the museum, and I think you were talking about this, Miranda. And so, you know, my partner is also very interested in public health. So we have a kind of a public health mission to make the world a more dementia-friendly place, and also to improve rates of diagnosis. So guards, all the front-of-house people, you know, museums are great places to work. They don't pay very much. The Studio Museum in Harlem is very cutting edge, it's hip, they give the greatest opening parties. People want to work there, but they really want to work there because Arts and Minds is there. They're really proud of their museum. So to sort of give that little extra boost is also something that's worth talking about. It's meant to be talking about challenges. And the challenges that I face as an organization that partners with museum, you know, the reason we do this is so that we can help museums build capacity. We want to help them do things that they couldn't otherwise do without working with us. So whether it's because your access team is too small, the commitment is not quite there, you don't quite know how to do it, we work with the museum and build the program together. And those partnerships have taken shape in very different ways. So I can say that at each of these museums, it's developed completely differently. It's partly because I've learned how to do it better over time, but it's also because the culture of each museum is a different place. And so it's in that we find the challenges, how to negotiate this, how to get the full buy-in. There's really only one partner here that's not appreciating fully how much credit they deserve for offering this space for people with dementia. And so, I mean, maybe in the breakouts we can talk a little bit about how we might get over that hurdle. But I think the way that I really like to talk about it, and the way in which we get to the heart of the matter is in what happens within the programs themselves. Where, and I like to model it this way and think of it as an act of solidarity between museums and participants, and that we as educators and museums as institutions are committed to accompanying people through the journey of dementia. And I sort of graft this onto Kit Wood's model of person-centered care, where everyone is included and warmly invited. We're involved in a worthwhile occupation, looking at and discussing art. Identity is always in play. You respond the way you do because you are who you are. Comfort, Francesca has discussed this. Emotional comfort, physical comfort. Attachments are strengthened. New attachments are formed. And for me, education, teaching is an act of love. And if we keep that and the art and the participant at the center, I'm kind of playing around with this model now. Showing the art, the facilitator, and the person with dementia right in the middle. And if the educator can come from a position of unconditional positive regard, have all the social workers left? Are there any social workers in the room? Okay, so I owe this to my colleague and social worker, Joyce Michelli. I didn't know about this concept, And I was thrilled to learn because I thought, well, unconditional love, I really can't do that as much as I'd love to. There are very few people in the world that, you know, that one can give unconditional love to. But unconditional positive regard, we can do that. We can regard every person as a human with full dignity. And so we can do that. And meaning making is really what we're after, right? And it's art and this kind of interaction that provides that stimulus.